Okay, we're running. Let's see, it's Kathy Borgman, right?
Yes, Kathy Borgman, correct.
Are you the president of the Friends? Or?
I am the executive director of the Friends of Arrow Rock.
You've been there for a long time? In that
well,
position?
I have. I've been in Arrow Rock for 30 years, and I've been the executive director since 1984.
Wow, great. Well,
so
yeah.
adding up here. Huh?
Yeah. You're getting it. You're opening a new museum in Arrow Rock. Is this a permanent museum, a permanent exhibit?
Yes, this is a permanent exhibit on the reflections of African American Arrow Rock, dating kind of looking at the time period of 1865 to 1960, and it's housed in a small area in actually a small building, which was the Masonic Lodge Hall for the African American community, and this will be in the lower level.
Why do you pick post-Civil War in the 20th century as opposed to the years before the Civil War? I recall there was slavery in that area.
There exactly was slavery in this area. I think Saline County had probably a third to a half of the population were enslaved African Americans. And we do have at the Arrow Rock State Historic Site Museum, there is also an African American component that ties into these early days. The property that the Friends of Arrow Rock own, which are the Browns Chapel Free Will Baptist Church and then this Masonic Lodge Hall, they both date from after the Civil War, and they were the church that was also used as a school was being built as early as 4 years after the Civil War. It was being built in Arrow Rock. And so since our properties really deal with this time of the sort of the Reconstruction and the era of segregation, the building of their African-American communities in a segregated society, that's what we've chosen to talk about. We don't have room to tell huge stories, but also we were able to do quite a few oral histories and interviews, and the documents and the records we have really relate quite well to this period of when people were able to purchase their own homes after slavery, because, of course, you know, right after slavery, no incomes, no education, no training. Many of the, as you follow the census records, in the early years, people still remained, a lot of them, on the plantations working. But as soon as they could gain some income of their own, they would be able to buy their own home. And a lot of times that was here in Arrow Rock. And then they would become day laborers, leaving their home to go work on the farms. So we see a community developing with the lodge halls. This was not the only lodge hall. There were two other lodge halls, neither one of those standing. There were two churches. There's only one church that stands yet. And then there were a number of homes, and a lot of the homes have been lost through the years, too. So we kind of are focusing on what was this African-American community like through these years.
Most of the folks, most of the African-American folks that stayed there were the former slaves who were in the area and just moved to Arrow Rock, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And where did they live? Because I've been to Arrow Rock many times, and I don't recall that I've ever seen any signs or anything that said this was the African-American side of town.
Mm-hmm. Right. And actually, that's one of the reasons that that gave impetus to several different people as long as 20 years ago now. It's probably when all of this was kind of starting to say we really need to save and interpret this part of our history exactly for that reason, because you can drive through town and not have any idea or walk and visit that a huge portion of the population of Arrow Rock for most of its history was African American. A couple of reasons. One is many of the homes that were built for the African Americans were not of as substantial materials. They weren't brick homes usually. There may be smaller homes. And then as the population left Arrow Rock, and especially through, it was kind of a combination of World War II, which opened up a lot of jobs in the city, which they never had the opportunity for before, and then also you had the farming becoming mechanized. If you were a farm laborer working teams of mules, you need a lot of people. Once you had a tractor, you didn't need as many people. So all of that kind of happening together through the 1940s and 50s caused many of those people to leave, and then homes were kind of left and vacated. They weren't maintained. They weren't of materials that were going to last as long. So some of those began to deteriorate, to actually fall down, to be taken down, and you see some of the newer houses and different houses coming in. So actually, this was one of the feelings, you know, that a lot of them lived along the street on the northern end of town, which is called Morgan Street. And that's where some of the new homes started going up, you know. So it became important if by saving at least these two public buildings, the lodge hall and the church, to really maintain some of this. And there are a couple of the homes still around, but pretty much they're gone. And actually, part of the exhibit, a really interesting part of the exhibit, are about five or six paintings of some of these African-American homes, which were already in pretty poor repair in the 1970s when Anna Mae Hodge moved here to the area. And she was an artist, and so she painted some of these kind of buildings that were starting to fall down, most of them which were previous African-American homes. So it's really her artwork that gives us a picture, a glimpse at a number of these. There's still a couple of the houses that are still here. But most of it, several of them are gone since that time.
At its peak, what was the greatest percentage of Arrow Rock's population that was black, do you think?
Well, I think probably, and Gary Kramer may have some better figures on this than some of the research that he was doing, but I think probably in that one-third to one-half is at different times and segments. And we're going to get some more specific information, I think, on that from some work that Gary has done. You know, Gary Kramer was our scholar in residence before he was the director of the State Historical Society, and while he was a teacher at William Woods, why he was our scholar in residence, that really helped us in the beginning of gathering data about our African-American community during the oral histories, and he's going to do an actually update article in the July issue of the Missouri Historical Review. Is going to be, I think, some more information on this from his research. So,
good. Well, I'll be seeing him tomorrow at a meeting of the trustees of the society in St. Louis. So, I'll just ask him about that.
Yes, get a little clue, because he'll, of course, be. Yeah. You'll get a sneak preview, because we'll hear it on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
So,
this is pretty unique. We don't have many African American oriented museums in the state of Missouri. I mean, we've got Kansas City with the Black Archives of Mid-America, or whatever they call it, and the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Mm-hmm. Is this a unique museum that you folks are opening up in Arrow Rock?
I think it is unique because it is our story. It is the story here of Arrow Rock and the people that lived here, and the two curators for this exhibit, which is Pam Parsons as our education director for the Friends of Arrow Rock on staff, and Nancy Fink, who is a volunteer trustee of our organization. They really focused on the oral histories and the quotes from the people themselves. And so I think it is unique in that it tells our story. And yet I think what was happening in Arrow Rock was indicative of what was happening in a number of communities in Missouri, and especially here along the river. So I think it really tells what was happening in rural Missouri. And I know Gary made this point longer ago, now that point went out of my head, so I guess that one was gone. So things that happened that there. Oh, okay. Here I know the point again. That what was happening in rural Missouri. Well, I'm not going to get it right, so I guess I better give up on that one.
Okay, that's fine. But I think back to, about the 1920s, the 1910 and 1930, that period in there, when the Klan was pretty prominent in Missouri, at least.
Mm-hmm.
How were black-white relations in Arrow Rock during that time?
I'm not sure that we really ever picked up anything too much about that.
Yeah.
I think that what we picked up more here was that people sort of had their place, and they seemed to feel overall okay about it because it was what was accepted on the black side and on the white side. You know, this is how things were. And so as for actual Klan activity, that's not a big, hasn't been a big part of the story, or at least the story, you know, that was told here. And one of the things that we found in talking with the African-American community sort of in general from a couple of different places is that what people were really interested in seeing in the exhibit is the accomplishments of their ancestors, you know, in the face, yes, of segregation and in the face of hardships. But this is what our ancestors did. You know, they built their homes, and they taught in their schools, and they educated their children, and they had jobs, and they had their churches, and they had their lodges. And so that's really what people said. We want to see our, and I think that's really true of all of us when we go to museums or exhibits. We want to see ourselves there and our ancestors there, and we want to see the things that that we are proud of, things that inspire and give us a sense of who we are. And so that's really been the focus of the exhibit. For actual Klan activity, that really hasn't come out prominently here.
Where did people go to school? Did Arrow Rock? I assume Arrow Rock had its own schools.
Arrow Rock had a black school. Yes, it did. And they came from really quite far around to come to this. There was a community about 7 miles from here called Union Hill, and the students walked from there over here to Arrow Rock. And then as they got older, they would have to go into actually even like Sedalia as it got later in later years and into the high school time. But yes, the school, I think, in the 1870 census, I believe, had about 60 students in it, of course, of all ages in those early years. So they really highly valued education, and you know, they had teachers, and yeah, they're one of the gentlemen, Harrison Green, he was the worshipful master, and he was a teacher, and he was a preacher, and so they really had leaders within their communities.
Just off the top of your head, do you know what the African-American population of Arrow Rock might be today, or in terms of percentage of population?
Well, I can tell you what our population is for sure. We are zero right now.
Zero.
We have no African-Americans who live in Arrow Rock anymore. So we had our last African-American lady by the name of Sue Hall, who was helpful as we were working on this project, died of a heart attack. She was just retirement age, and she died of a heart attack about maybe a year and a half ago.
Wow.
So, yeah, we really miss her. And so our population has, I would say, you know, about 30 years ago, we still probably had, 15-20 people amongst the about 100 people that were here. And right now our new official population is 56 and zero African-Americans. So,
56 people live in Arrow Rock
56
now.
People. That's our official census record, because, you know, we have to count people who have their primary residence here only and within the city limits. But we have about another 40 people who are part-time residents here, have their primary home somewhere else, but spend a lot of time here and contribute here. And we have people in the neighborhood. So we're our suburbs, we call it, of Arrow Rock. But we have about, you know, around 100 active folks around in the spot. But it's still our official sign out there now says 56. And so it's an amazing thing that in our community of this size that we are able to do something like this. And it's really only possible because that might be what our official population says. But we have a wonderful group of people who consider Arrow Rock their home and support us in wonderful ways, just like the 500 and some members that the Friends of Arrow Rock have and the backers for the Lyceum Theater and our 100,000 people that will generally visit here in the course of a year. And so we're a kind of unique town in that regard for we certainly couldn't do it with just the people that live here. So it's pretty nice that a lot larger population considers Arrow Rock their home, too. And this is really good. We have descendants of African Americans, and we're to welcome back to Arrow Rock. We're really looking forward to that. And it was another one of the projects here, and finding the people and getting the word out. And as more African Americans study their history and their roots, you know, to be able to come back to Arrow Rock to see their heritage is a really nice benefit of our project. So,
I've been in a lot of small town and small county museums as I've traveled around the country, and I don't very often see very many exhibits about the minorities in those communities, even in the small towns. So this is kind of special to have a small town that has this much of a focus on the minority community that it had for 100 years or 150 years almost, really, in one form or another.
Yeah, I think it's a long needed process of how preservation and the preservation of our history has taken place. You know, Arrow Rock this year marks our 100th anniversary of doing preservation in Arrow Rock. So when you look at it in that light, the first groups that were marking the Old Trails Roads back in 1912, and the Old Trails Road Association, that was the first group of people that actually formed here in this area for the purpose of saving something, and that was the tavern, to teach your histories to the passerby. And in those days, you know, saving history was, well, what's your most important building? Who's your most important person? You know, and so you save a building like the tavern and another little building next to it, you know, it goes down. And then you start talking about who's your most prominent people from here. So you've got the governors and you've got the quinine doctor and you've got the artist George Caleb Bingham, you know. And then people start thinking, well, what about the craftsmen and the people, you know? And then you say, well, yeah, you've got Johnny Seitz, the gunsmith guy, and you've got the print shop, you know, and people start talking about that, you know. And then you finally start saying, but what about the ordinary people who lived here? And what about the laborers? And what about the African-American community who really were the labor force of making all of this happen? And so we have this kind of a hierarchical way that we have gone about preservation. And I think that the last 20 years, probably, while we've really working with this, 20, probably 25 years and more, people have had a renewed interest in the ethnic groups, the minority groups. Today, we wouldn't save just the best building and tear down all the rest. We'd try to save the entire streetscape. We'd try to save the whole context of it. But it's been a progression of preservation history. So while we have the things here in Arrow Rock that we've preserved, we also tell the story of how preservation has developed and grown through the years. And on one hand, it's really wonderful that this has been saved in 2012. On the other hand, we'd say, why in the world did it take us 100 years to figure out that every person that contributed to a community is important and their story needs to be told? But
Do you recall when this first came up? Who had the first idea to do something like this?
We had a couple of things that were going on kind of simultaneously. The church and the little church was down to hardly any people that were left in it, and so they, just a few ladies left, so they put it up for sale. And Ted and Virginia Fisher, a couple that were living here, they had purchased their own home from African Americans, and so they had been gaining the title to their property, and they were interested in the African American community. They saw someone working on the Black Lodge building, who knows what they were going to maybe turn that into, and they just bought both of those buildings. And they said, you know, these need to be saved, and they started talking to the Friends of Arrow Rock about doing this. And at the same time, and I don't even know, they, in my mind, they just were all happening at the same time, was another lady by the name of Teresa Habernall, who had grown up here, an African-American woman who had grown up here, and she was seeing exactly what you said you saw, driving through Arrow Rock and having no idea any African-Americans even lived here. And so she wrote us to the Friends of Arrow Rock, and she said, you know, this is, you know, for a community that's preserving your history, this needs to be saved too. All of these things were working together and coming to the Friends of Arrow Rock, and so we accepted the gift of the property from the Fishers, and sort of the mandate from Teresa that, yes, it is time that that these things be preserved. And so we worked first with support from a lot of donors in the Neighborhood Assistance Program to restore both of the buildings. And then we also were involved with Gary helped us. We got involved with Tim Bauman, Dr. Timothy Bauman, doing historic archaeology. And he spent over a period of at least 10 field schools from 1996 on doing all kind of archaeology on all different types and writing about it. And then became, you know, how do we put this exhibit together? And really not much of an African American population here, and how do we work on this? Humanities Council sponsored a program, and we worked a little bit with Lois Conley at the Black World History Museum in St. Louis to try to get a handle on how to go about it. And so it's taken a lot of work, and then finally we just said it's time we get this done. And Nancy Fink and Pam Parsons settled into it, and have spent a good portion of the last 2 years of their life really trying to organize and integrate this, and then work with a designer and a fabricator and doing the whole exhibit thing, which is kind of newer for us too. So it's had, and all along the way, you know, major funders, major contributors. It's going to be a daunting task, and I was just thinking a bit of a dangerous task on a Saturday to try to recognize people, because there have been so many key people at so many key times that have kept this moving, that it really is a community and a collaborative effort from the Friends of Arrow Rock and from this community, both the white and the African-American community. So it will look deceptively simple when you go in and see it at this stage. But as you well know from writing and researching and publishing things, it's an impressive process to accomplish. So.
You guys are only 9 or 10 years away from the centennial of the Arrow Rock Tavern becoming the first historic building acquired by the state. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. That will be coming up very soon. We've got lots of anniversaries coming up. Yes, and it's an amazing thing that when the tavern was being restored. They were patterning themselves after the Ladies Association that had restored Mount Vernon. And the DAR was promoting and they're nationwide saying, here's what's happening in Arrow Rock and in this chapter in Missouri, and you should be doing this in your own communities. So it is early preservation that was being done here. And, significant contributions.
Folks don't realize how much influence the DAR had in those days.
This was huge. That Old Trails Road Association then gave rise to the local DAR chapter here. And the DAR chapter, they just celebrated their 90th anniversary. So, yes, and the DAR, this became a state project for them. Many of them, had prominent husbands in places of power that they could get things done, and they just, went after it, and they were organized and efficient and really leaders in preservation. And actually, at our annual meeting this Sunday, our local chapter of the DAR nominated the Friends of Arrow Rock for Historic Preservation Recognition Award, a national award from the DAR that they will be presenting to us this Saturday. So we're really proud about that.
Yeah. I've got to ask you one last thing. Mm-hmm. I notice when you talk about the town, you put the emphasis on rock. And most people I talk to put the emphasis on the arrow.
Well, someone else has told me that. They say, I like how you say Arrow Rock. I said, I don't know. I just talk this way, and it's just how it comes out. So,
well, I, the reason I asked was because sometimes the way the original settlers referred to a community hangs around through the language the people who descend in that community have.
Yeah.
So I wondered maybe if that's not the way it's intended to be said.
Well, I don't know. I can't say that I'm a native.
I just
came here in 1980s, and I don't know why I say it that way, but it must be the same way that people can hear me talk across the road and say, "Well, it must be Kathy Borgman over there." I know that. I just have one of those voices. But someone told me one time, they said, "Well, when you say you're going downtown, that means you're going to the downtown area of Arrow Rock, and if you're going to town, that means you're going to Marshall."
Yeah.
So we've got that. But someone else said, "Well, you say Arrow Rock." I said, "Well, I don't know. I just that's how I say it."
Sometimes I heard you put the emphasis on Arrow a couple of times too, but I was just curious.
Well,
this is going to be a great, great day for you guys up there on Saturday. It sounds like.
Yes, it really is, and we're so pleased that Tim Bauman can come and speak, and Gary Kramer, because those two guys really have led the research end of this and contributed so much to helping us. And they both have also written so well. Tim's articles have been all across the country, and so have Gary's. And so it's, I think, we're honored with this. And I think the story, as I mentioned earlier, that's uniquely Arrow Rock is really uniquely a much larger story, too. So
I just thought of something I was going to ask you, and I forgot to ask you. Why do you cut off the exhibit at 1960?
Well, I think we cut that off as kind of the looking at sort of the end of segregation, and even though that was a little sooner, but just kind of that whole Jim Crow era. And I think that was the main reason, and that trying to capture that time period. So
okay, good. Well, I'm going to get up there and see this thing as soon as I can.
Well,
because it's really exciting, and I love Arrow Rock. I think it's a really cool
place. Well, I know you do, and that's just really really nice. And I know in your writings we get lots of mention in there. And we plan to have it open during the day. I just put the open sign out and unlock the door in the morning and let people go in, because it's a lot of data. It's a small space and a lot of data. And so this way people can spend as little or as long in there as they will like. And we're just excited about it and glad to have it and have another thing for the area. And I appreciate you.
No, glad to do it. I'm glad to do it.
Calling about it. And
well,
helping spread the word. So, because I know just one, you know, be nice to have more than just this one day, and that'll be good. Invite people to come and have it. And the Dr. Sappington Museum is also open when you come. We don't have we're not doing any big opening for it yet, and we still got a few of the last details with the labels or some of that, but it's right up next to the Lyceum Theater. And it's been closed for a number of years while we've been working on it. We kind of have it going again, too, although we haven't promoted it a lot. So when you come over, make sure you go by and see that, too.
Fascinating. All righty. Kathy, I appreciate all your time this afternoon.
Well, thank you much for the call. All right.
Bye-bye.